columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
Major League Baseball, they tweeted out their record projections for every single team in the MLB. Where did they have the Rockies finishing? In the West. And do we agree? Where do you think that... Oh, actually, you're looking at it right now. You're not like Stoke, who like just doesn't pay attention to the rundown.
I look at the rundown.
I truly have
to
like
nailed that question, though.
I truly have to hold Stoke by the hand and walk him through for 3 hours a day.
I like to know where we're going.
Their projection for the NL West. They have the Dodgers right at the top, as you would suspect, winning 103 baseball games. I was actually looking at over-unders this morning. The Dodgers are at 98.5.
Wow.
That's where the over-under is.
Man, that's a big number.
It's a huge number. There's a team out there that has a higher number.
Really?
Yes.
Well, obviously, it's an American League team. Who is it?
100.5.
New York?
Bingo.
Okay. Well, 100.5 is a... Those numbers seem astronomical to me. Like, 100-win season, even for a really, really good baseball team, is... Like, that's a big accomplishment.
Sure.
For that to be the... This kind of the benchmark of, like, yeah, you got to be better than that for you to win on this futures bet, seems like a grandiose task. But, look, I look at these standings... And the Dodgers are the outlier, right? They're the Russian judge. You kind of just need to take them off the list here. They got them going 103-59.
They're the Russian judge.
Yes.
Say like at the Olympics?
Right, right. Where everybody else is like, yeah, that was like a 9.2, and the Russian judge gave him a 6.8.
Yeah,
like,
no, I love the reference.
What is he watching? They're the outlier. Everybody else, the next best team is the Mets at 88. Okay. The worst team is San Francisco at 68. How many? That's 14.
This is in the NL.
In the National League. 14 teams that are within 20 games. And then you got the Dodgers at 103. The Rockies are sandwiched right in the middle of that bunch. Right there with the Diamondbacks, the Padres. I mean, I keep hearing about how, oh, yeah, Nolan Arenado's upset because every team in the division has done so much. Okay, well, Arizona and San Diego are projected to go 79-83. Obviously, their big spending spree really got MLB fired up about what they're going to do this year. The best team in the Central, according to this, is the Reds. 86 wins. That's 9 games better. They have the Rockies, just to point it out, 77-85, which I think is low.
Right.
But the best team in the Central Division.
Wait, hold on. I want to point this out. You just said that was low? Don't mean to jump in and interrupt you. This is a higher number than the experts in the desert have as the Rockies win total.
Well, and look.
Isn't that something, though?
It is, but in the Arenado situation makes this difficult. If that wasn't going on, I would say... Go to DIA, hop on a bird, and, you know, have yourself some fun. This would be my recommendation. This is a team, again, and this was unrealistic, but a year ago right now, people were picking this team, this exact same roster,
yes,
to win the World Series.
Yes.
And now we're saying they're going to win less than 77 games? Like, okay, if they can, again, if Nolan Arenado isn't traded, if this doesn't turn into a huge distraction, and right now those look like big ifs, I think this is a team that can win 83-88 games. I do. I think they can be in that realm. Well, that would win the East or tie them with the Mets, according to this. It would win the Central, and it would give them, if they got to 88, and it would make them right in the hunt for the wild card.
Oh, right there. And just for a point of reference, last year, if you applied that same logic to the 2019 standings, if they won 88 games, they'd be right behind the Dodgers in the NL West and right in the thick. Milwaukee and the Nationals were the wild card teams. Milwaukee won 89 games.
Right. So I think the fact that the Rockies didn't do anything, it gets overhyped based on two things. One, they were so bad last year. 71-91 is dreadful. But I think the date is July 3rd. They were on pace for their best season in franchise history.
Like, as we have pointed out many times here on the show.
It's a remarkable collapse. So you pointed it out so much, I know it off the top of my head.
Right. On July 3rd, they were on pace for the best record in the history of the organization. And by the end of the month, it was the worst month in organizational history.
So me, I'm looking at that going, well, I think that's an aberration. Because the previous 2 years, they were a playoff team. The first half of last year, they were a playoff team. The second half of last year, they were the worst they've been maybe in the history of the franchise in more than a quarter century. So the last 3 years, 2.5 have been good, 1's been bad. Recency bias, you're going to look at the bad. I get it. But the other reason the lack of moves looks bad is because the Dodgers are so dang good. They're a freaking all-star team. They're projected to go 103-59. Well, yeah, if you're constantly comparing yourself to, you know, LeBron James, you're going to think I'm not a very good basketball player. Right? But if LeBron's the outlier and everybody else is just, you know, kind of a guy.
So you're saying
at the gym.
So really what you're saying is that the projected win total from the Rockies from Major League Baseball here and the reason why we started this topic, or the over under win total, which is lower from the experts in the desert. The experts in the desert believe that the Rockies are about 74.5 wins. I've seen 75 in some places.
Okay.
But what you're saying is that number is an overcorrection.
Yes.
It's an overcorrection from a previous really bad stretch of time that didn't even apply to the whole season.
Correct. And look at all the things that went wrong last year, right? Kyle Freeland went from being third or fourth in the Cy Young voting, so he can't get anybody out in Albuquerque.
Yeah.
Right? Daniel Murphy had a terrible year. Ian Desmond had a terrible year. Wade Davis couldn't get you and me out at Coors Field.
Right.
Jake McGee was a disaster. Brian Shaw was a mess. Like, Germán Márquez wasn't the same. Like, everything that could go wrong did go wrong all at the same time. Could that happen again? Sure. It happened once, so it could happen again. But I think the odds of that happening again are slim. This is a team.
They're not that bad.
Right.
They're not that bad.
They had four All-Stars.
Yeah.
So their everyday lineup is pretty darn good.
Yep.
You need Ian Desmond and Daniel Murphy to not be awful. You need Ryan McMahon to continue to improve. You need David Dahl to not, you know, dislocate his ankle out in the outfield on a nice Sunday afternoon or whatever it was. You need Kyle Freeland. I don't expect him to be what he was when he almost won the Cy Young. You need him to be a good number three.
Sure.
You need John Gray to be a good number two, and you need Germán Márquez to be a legitimate number one. You know what? Not even a legitimate number one. A Colorado Rockies version of a number one.
Yeah.
A guy who can win 17 games.
Yeah.
That's a great year for a Rockies starter.
And really, John Gray, and you mentioned him there in passing, he needs to follow up last year's performance, because there was so many times that I'd watch that dude pitch and say, man, this is good. This is good.
Yeah.
He really bounced
back. On a team that was
bounced
awful.
Back. Yeah.
Late in the year, he was still pitching well. So I look at this, and I actually find it to be very good news, because other than the Dodgers, there's nobody in the National League where I say, man, they're never going to catch them. Like, if I was looking at this in the East and the Central had a couple of teams where, like, yeah, the Cubs are going to win 100. The Cardinals are projected to win 92. I'd look at that and say the Rockies aren't going to compete for a wild card. But right now, according to this, the wild card's winning 87 and 85 games. Could the Rockies win 85 games? Yeah, I think they could. That's what they were the previous steps. What they were in 2017, 2018.
I mean, and they were better than that. In 2017, we got to remember, they were an 87-game winner. In 2018, they went 91 games. They went from winning 91 to losing 91. And Kyle Freeland is actually a microcosm of the same arc of the Rockies from 2018 to 2019.
Yes. So let's just say they overachieved when they won 91 and they underachieved when they won 71. And they're going to split the difference. That's exactly 500, 81 and 81. If this team is 500, they're four games out of the wild card. Okay, they got to figure out a way to win four more games than 500, and they're right in the mix. I think this is very encouraging, because the rest of the National League is pretty mediocre. And you know what the Rockies are? Right in that mix. They really are. They're kind of in that mix. They got a lot of ifs that have to turn out for them to win 81 to 85 games. So does every other team.
Sure.
Other than the Dodgers. You got one team that's great, and then a bunch of teams that's like, we'll see. Would it shock you if Atlanta won 72 games instead of 83 as they haven't projected here? It's not that big a difference. I think this team is going to be better than people think, and I think these projections are good news. We're caught up because the Rockies are in the same division as this juggernaut, and we're not able to compete with the juggernaut, and that's disappointing. You're never going to. They're not going to. Not in the way baseball is structured right now.
A prominent national media member had Pat Shurmur on the tip of his tongue yesterday. I'll tell you who said what next. A prominent national media member had Pat Shurmur on the tip of his tongue. It was yesterday, and it was on ESPN's NFL Live, their panel there. You like NFL Live?
I do.
Okay. You like Lewis Riddick?
I do. He's going to be a GM soon.
You think so?
Yeah.
Wouldn't be shocked.
I think he's going to be the next media guy to make that leap.
Wasn't he pursued this? I saw something, some headline somewhere.
Yeah, his name came up in conversations. I don't remember if he actually interviewed for open jobs, but I think he's going to be the next Mike Mayock to make that leap. I do like him a lot.
Yeah. I mean, he checks all the boxes. I mean, this dude was a former player himself. He was an executive, a scout with the Redskins. He was a scout with the Eagles. He became the assistant director of pro personnel, and then ultimately the director of pro personnel. Lewis Riddick comes correct. He's just a truth teller, yeah. Not a lot of fluff, just kind of is very direct. And yesterday on ESPN's NFL Live, their panel discussed the new coordinators that moved around this NFL offseason and chose which ones stood out the most. And Lewis Riddick is focused on Pat Shurmur. And if he's ready for the challenge of improving this Broncos offense, check this out.
I think in Denver, with Pat Shurmur going out there to really take over that offense and continue to develop Drew Locke, he's the guy who, if you remember, when he was in Minnesota and he was coordinating for Case Keenum looked like someone who you thought, this guy's a franchise quarterback. All of a sudden, he leaves. Case Keenum leaves as well. He goes to Denver. Case doesn't look very good. You know, just round and round and round. Pat Shurmur has to get Drew Locke ready to go because the defense will be ready to go. Vic Fangio will get that side of the ball squared away.
Interesting conversation. I love what he said about Case. It's something that we know around here, and me in particular, a little extra, because I did believe that after Case had started, what was it, like 13 games or something like that, 3-1 touchdown to interception ratio on a winning football team. I thought the Broncos were on to something there. I was wrong, and gladly take the L on that. But what he said there about Shurmur as it relates to Drew Locke and this offense. Let me ask you this, James, and James Merrillat filling in for Brandon Stokely today. What's a good year for Pat Shurmur and this Broncos offense?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. One, I think this is an offense that needs to average more than 20 points a game. I think you'd like to be in that 22 to 24 range. That would be a big leap from where they've been in recent years.
For sure.
We talked about earlier, this is a team that seemingly scored in the teens every single week. Didn't matter who was playing quarterback or what was going on. So if they can be 22 points a game, I think that would be great.
If you're 22 points a game, just for context, if you're 22 points a game, you're right there in, call it, like 16th, 17th best offense in the league.
Okay.
So middle of the road.
Middle of the pack. Do I think they're going to make the jump and be a top 10 offense in, you know, any significant categories? No. Could they in some? Like, hey, they're a top 10 running team and things like that. Sure. But I that's not my expectation. They need to be a middle of the pack offense, because in recent years, they've been 28, 24,
yeah.
27,
yeah.
26. They need to be out of the 20s. So if they can be 14th, 15th, 16th, I think that'd be a great leap. It's still a team that is the best side of the football is going to be their defense. It's the side of the ball that they're going to have most of their money invested in.
Sure.
Because the offense has got a bunch of young guys on rookie contracts. So they need to play to the defense, play to their strength. That's the other part of this I think they need to do. The Broncos have been bad in recent years in part because they've been a three-and-out machine. You have to help your defense. You have to flip the field. You have to make the opposing team go 80 yards to beat you or to score a touchdown, not 50. Play to your strength. So can they be a little bit better on third down? Well, they were with Drew Locke last year. In the last five games, they were significantly better.
Yep.
You know, that's one of those stats that, you know, is it super sexy of, hey, they still punted. Yeah, but they got two first downs and punted from the 40 instead of punting from the 18. I think those kind of things they need to be better at. So better on third down, score 22 points a game, and then this is something they need to continue from this year. Don't turn the ball over. They average like one turnover a game this year. That's exactly where they need to be. Don't put your defense in a bad position. Really, the only game last year where the offense really, really hurt them in that regard was up in Green Bay. They kept giving Aaron Rodgers a short field, and you're dead when you do that. If they can do those three things, then they don't sound super exciting. Take care of the football. convert some third downs, you know, flip the field a little bit and average 22 points a game with this defense, assuming they bring back Justin Simmons,
yeah,
replace Chris Harris Jr., or bring him back, I think they can win 9-10 games. I really do.
Yeah, and I don't think that's a crazy statement. I really don't, James. And I know football doesn't work like this. No sport does. And I'm not sure if you heard this segment a week ago or not. But I basically went through and kind of echoed what you just said. If the Broncos could average 4 more points a game and go from 17 points to 21, 22 points a game, if you just apply that same logic to the 2019 schedule, the Broncos are a 10-win football team. And I know no one wants to hear that because you're just adding 4 points on the final scores of games that were actually played against other professional athletes, and
so
dynamics in that game are, you know, were what they were.
But it's Jacksonville, Chicago, Indy. It's the 3 games they lost at the gun.
Jacksonville, you lose 26-24, maybe you win that game. The Colts, 15-13, when, you know, Jacoby Brissett has Von Miller's arms wrapped around him, and somehow he hits T.Y. Hilton down the right sideline, and they lose that game 15-13. It's maybe even the game in Minnesota. Maybe it's insurmountable, yeah, for Minnesota. They come back and they win 27-23. What if that game goes in?
Maybe it's 11 wins.
And you can go down that road. Yeah, you really can. And again, I know it doesn't work like that, but if we're going to apply that same sort of logic, these margins in the National Football League are so razor thin. It's so hard to win games. Maybe more than any other, like, that's why the Broncos can upset the Houston Texans. And just that's why Tennessee can upset Baltimore. That's why we love it. They got to get better in that category. And I think we're all expecting them to.
Yeah. And I don't think 22 points a game, being better on third down and not turning the football over, similar to what you did this past year, I don't think those are unrealistic expectations. But that's not a huge leap for a bunch of guys that are going to have more experience. Cortland Sutton will be year 3. Noah Fant, year 2. Dalton Reisner, year 2. Drew Locke isn't just starting out and playing his first 5 games. Pat Shurmur has a heck of a lot more experience than Rich Gangarello. I don't think those are unrealistic expectations. I think they're very, very doable. And I think it's a team that, look, they're not going to be lighting up the scoreboard at that, but they're going to not be boring, and they're going to be very competitive. That's, to me, that's the formula for 2020, and you build off of that.
I love it. James Merrillat filling in for Brandon Stokely today. We are about to be joined by a guest that covers the Denver Broncos but has never joined us here on Stokely and Zach. That mystery guest next. All right, I told you we were going to be joined by a special guest that has never joined the Stokely and Zach show, but he does cover the Denver Broncos. Now, unfortunately, and we're already off to a rough start. Get that phone right. unfortunately, Stokely's not here today. He is out on a very important assignment that we'll talk about tomorrow. James Merrillat filling in for Brandon Stokely today. But it is Mike Kliss of 9 News. You've never joined us here on Stokely and Zach. Unfortunately, Stokely's not here, Mike. But what's it like being back on the fan? This is kind of cool.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we all know how big the fan is, how big the, you know, how great a job you guys have done as far as the audience and the ratings. And, you know, you guys have kept the Broncos on their toes. I'm a long time listener and first time in a while caller. How's that?
I like that. Let me start here, Mike. And some folks sort of roll their eyes at the following question. I don't. I think it's important. For the past 5 years, it's been critical. Who's going to play backup quarterback for the Broncos?
Yeah, they're going to, it's going to be a veteran type. I know Case Keenum is the guy everybody has mentioned, just primarily because of his magical year that he had with Shurmur. And that's why it makes sense. You know, Case Keenum had his 2-year shot as a starter, full-time starter, and now it's time for him to become a backup again, a good backup. And he obviously knows Shurmur, and it would make a lot of sense. It would depend what kind of money he's asking for. He's coming off a contract where he made 18. He was supposed to make 36 over two. I think he wound up making 25 over two. But, you know, if he's a $3 million guy, I would think it makes sense. If he's going to be a $5 million guy, I can see the Broncos going with another backup. And I don't have the list in front of me, but, you know, it's probably going to be a quarterback that can move. I don't think it's going to be Joe Flacco. I'm almost positive of that, that they'll move on from him. And, you know, among other reasons, Joe, I think, would have a difficult time being Drew Lock's backup. And you want a guy who would welcome being Drew Lock's backup. And I think, you know, Brett Hundley, maybe he can move around. He's been a backup the last 3, 4, 5 years. That's a possibility. I mentioned Marcus Mariota, but he might be a little too good as far as creating somewhat of a quarterback controversy if things go bad for Drew Lock, and probably will. He'll probably have a couple clunker games here this year, and people will start saying put in Mariota, and I think the Broncos would like to avoid that. But they do need a veteran, preferably one who's got some athleticism.
Mike, you touched on my big concern with a quarterback like Case Keenum or somebody like that coming in as a backup. If this team's 3-4, Drew Lock's coming off of a game where he threw 3 picks, I think there's that temptation for Vic Fangio, Pat Shurmur, to look at the veteran behind the rookie and say, boy, we're right there in the mix. Let's make the switch. Do you think this team is committed to, hey, we're going Drew Lock, 16 games, no matter what, we need to find out if he's the quarterback of the future? Or if they have a legitimate guy back there who's won games in this league, is there the possibility that they pull the plug if there's a couple of clunkers in a row?
Well, right now they're committed to Drew Lock for the 16 games through thick and thin. That's where they're at now. We all know public pressure has a way of changing plans sometimes. You also have to take a look. I don't know what those clunker games look like right now. They could be, you know, a couple of bad luck tip passes where, you know, the results aren't there. It could be something where it looks like Drew Lock absolutely can't play. I think Drew Lock is going to be fine playing all 16. If he starts to struggle, I think Fangio and Shurmur need to figure out how to win while their quarterback is struggling. That happens all the time in the NFL. I mean, Tom Brady has had some bad games and they've won anyway. You have to figure that out, whether it's running the ball more, whether it's check down passes, playing to your defense, playing special teams and field position. There's ways to win if your quarterback is struggling. But the indication I get is that it's full steam ahead with Drew Lock. They liked a lot that he showed, not just his passing ability, just poise in the pocket, the ability to move, the way he interacted with his teammates. Vic Fangio alluded to that. I think they're wanting to be cautious about it because they're not wanting to put any hype on the guy. But, you know, I think they're hoping he's their quarterback from now on.
Yeah, and we saw real signs over the course of 5 games that would lead you to believe that that could be the case. Not that we're crowning him yet, but gosh, it's hard not to be optimistic after what we saw. Moving on from the quarterback position, I'm curious to see if you have heard any reaction from within the Denver Broncos organization relating to the Broncos being one of just 5 teams that could be asked to do Hard Knocks, along with the Detroit Lions, the Jacksonville Jags, Arizona Cardinals, and Pittsburgh Steelers. I know no one is thrilled to do Hard Knocks, so I guess the way I'll ask the question is, what would be the resistance level from the Broncos?
Yeah, the Broncos have, they've been up for it before and got out of it for various reasons. I do think, in fact, I'm kind of thinking it will be the Broncos doing the Hard Knocks. I think the feeling inside is, well, we came up with a lot of excuses before. Don't think we can get out of this one is where they're looking. They're almost expecting it. The reason why you don't want to do it is you don't want opponents to pick up on any, you know, behind the curtain secrets, you know, to whatever it is. There have been things on this Hard Knocks program, from what I understand. Believe it or not, I haven't seen too much of it. I never watch it live. I don't have HBO. I've seen it later, what they've done. But, you know, the cutting, no one ever likes, the Hard Knocks likes to have the guys cut. I'm sure Hard Knocks was going to be pushing for, we want John Elway to cut guys. You know, that's what they want. And so I would anticipate it would be the Broncos' turn here. They're going to try to be as cautious as they can about it, but I'm sure there'll be a few secrets on how they operate that will get out there to other teams.
Well, I'll say this, Mike, if it is the Denver Broncos on Hard Knocks, I think you should be able to write that off to Nine News and get yourself HBO for a couple months.
It would be
great for what we do and content and getting to know these guys. And I'll say this on the way out, and I wanted to make sure I said this. Vic Fangio profiles like someone who would resist this, but he has time and again over the last year done the opposite of what I thought that he would do or who he would be. So maybe he would welcome this. I don't know. Vic has surprised me in the past. And we're not gonna
agree.
Yeah,
I agree. He's more talkative and candid and friendly than I thought it would be. And we're not the only ones. I've had some assistant coaches come up to me and say, you know, during this past year, you know, he's better with the press than I thought he'd be.
Yeah. And I agree.
You know, maybe there's a little ham. There's a little ham in the coach.
Yep, and it's behind a cloak, though. It's behind that 60-year-old cloak.
Yeah.
Really good stuff. Mike Kliss, welcome. I know you're going to be joining us here periodically, weekly, and we welcome that.
Yep.
It's good to have you, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, there he goes, Mike Kliss of Nine News, another great addition here at The Fan that we look forward to tapping into.
He and I got along fine. He answered my question.
He did.
Told you.
He did.
No big deal. Much ado about nothing.
It's dead. The beef is dead. We're moving on.
Knock on wood if you're with me.
But knock on wood if you're with me. All right. There was something most of us knew about one of Denver's biggest stars, but now we know for sure. And what we knew may actually cost him dearly. You want to stick around for this? Details next. There was something that most of us knew about one of Denver's biggest stars, but we didn't know exactly the details, and what we now know may actually cost him dearly. And I use that last term sort of loosely, but I do mean it. I'm talking about Nikola Jokic, and I'm talking about the first month of the season and how that may hold him back from winning the NBA's MVP. He is playing at an MVP caliber right now. But what most of us knew about Nikola Jokic is he came back to this NBA season completely out of shape.
No. Everybody told us he looks fine. He looks the same.
It was amazing, James. And James Merrillat filling in for Brandon Stokley today. It was amazing to see some of the blind defense played on Jokic's behalf when it came to his weight. Oh, he just plays heavy. No, that's just his body type. I got a text message from my buddy Terrence in Chicago, who follows the game as closely as anyone I know. And he sent me a text after the first week of the season saying, your boy looks like a hog. And Twitter told you it wasn't a problem. But then Nikola Jokic sits down here in the last couple days after All-Star Weekend, and says this.
I mean, it's just happened. I think it's maybe I need a little more time to warm up, to get going. I really don't know, but I think I didn't shoot that well in the first period. Like, my shots was always off and short, and I was a little bit overweight, and then now I lost a lot of weight, and I'm feeling good out there.
How much did you drop? How many?
Around 20, 25 pounds.
During the season?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. What did you do to lose weight?
It's just our strength coach, Felipe. He's with us 5 years, and he's doing everything for me for 5 years. So he just gave me a little diet, little workout plans, and we kind of go through that together.
He lost 25 pounds during the NBA season. I was one of these guys that said that it was happening. I saw the picture of him tending to his horses, and it looked like he was on the same diet as the 2,000-pound animal he was taking care of.
Yeah, during the offseason in Serbia, back
right,
home.
Right.
Yeah. No, and I noticed it watching him in the All-Star game, and a part of it was like he's wearing number 2. It's kind of a slimming number.
Mm-hmm.
Like, man, he looks like a totally different – he looks like half the person. But this doesn't surprise me at all. Obviously, it's had a big impact on his play. I mean, in February, he's been great. Every month of the season, he's got better and better and better and better. So he was not playing well early in the year, and everybody was down on him, and not everybody. But when you would say something about it, there were the guys who were around this team all the time who would jump on you. You don't know what you're talking about. This is how Nikola Jokic plays. This is always how he looks. He's a slow starter. He's not out of shape. There was the guy, the radio guy in Philly, who took a lot of heat in this town for saying Nikola Jokic was out of shape. Looks like that guy, Eskin, I think is his name. Looks like maybe he deserves an apology or two, because Jokic just admitted he was 20 to 25 pounds overweight. Here's the problem I have. You sign a 5-year, $148 million contract, you can't show up in shape. You're going to play your way into shape. You're going to spend October and November dropping the LBs that you put on during the summer. I have a problem with that. And look, I know they started off the season. I remember at one point they were 13-3. And they had all these games where, you know, they had to come from 17 back, or they blew a 19-point lead but then still won in overtime in Minnesota after, you know, all these crazy wins. But it's like, there's trouble here. This isn't good. They survived it, but that doesn't excuse it. Just because they were able to get through it and it didn't hurt their record, and they don't have these games where, you know, they started 9-7 and we're like, that's going to cost them a 2-seed or a 3-seed. They didn't. The record was fine. They still had some bad losses, but it wasn't because of Jokic being out of shape. It was just weird games they had. That doesn't excuse coming in out of shape when you're the best player on the team. You're making $26 million this season. You can't start getting in shape late August. You can't do the Rocky Balboa training and, you know, run around with the horses and do something to get to this weight, or at least closer to it, so you hit the ground running. It's great he's in shape now. You know what? It's for the stretch run. He's going to be raring to go. It all worked out. But, man, that doesn't make it right.
And what everything you just said, I would co-sign. I would co-sign everything you just said. And I'm not saying it to be agreeable. What you the signing of the contract and the way that he responded to it in the first season after that that signing that thing is unimpressive. But I'll say this. This dude, what he's been doing right now in like the last 2 months of this season, is MVP caliber play. And I know it's a little bit too late, but I'm here. The reigning Western Conference Player of the Week, if he had done from the very start, and I've heard other NBA guys that I really admire, guys like Zach Lowe, saying that the first month and a half of the season took him out of the MVP race. You can't reasonably hold his resume up to Giannis Antetokounmpo and say he's not surpassing him, lapping him right now, but his play right now is nearly equal that of Giannis Antetokounmpo in the last month and a half, 2 months or so. But and here I got some numbers to back it up that I looked through last night. In the first 17 games of this season, James, in the months of October and November, Jokic averaged under 16 points a game. Well, what a drop off from the MVP caliber season he had from a year ago. So that's the first 17 games. That's a huge chunk of your schedule. He averaged under 16 points a game. Then in the month of December, he averages 21. Then in the month of January, he averages over 23. And in the 6 games in February, he is averaging 27 points per game. But you look at the way he started. This is a crazy stat here. I went through his game log last night. In 7 of the first 19 games of the season, Jokic scored in single digits.
And again, I know they were 13-3 through 16 games. I just remember doing an interview with Dan Jacobs and that number coming up. So that's almost those 19 games, right? So whatever they were through 19, they were probably 14-5 or 15-4, something like that. It didn't hurt him. It didn't cost him, but it could have. And I think, he's your best player. He's the guy who is supposed to set the tone. He's the leader of the team, or should be. This makes me question whether or not he's the right guy. When's the last time LeBron James came into a season out of shape? Or Giannis?
It just wouldn't happen.
Or Kobe? Or Michael?
Just wouldn't
or
happen.
Go through the list.
Yeah.
The guys who win championships, win MVPs, carry their team, and are the proverbial alpha. It just doesn't happen. When was Hakeem Olajuwon ever out of shape for the first month and a half of the season?
It just wouldn't happen.
So you can't give me the big man nonsense or Patrick Ewing
or guys
like that.
Well, I will say this, and I am not, I don't get paid to play defense for Nikola Jokic, but I will say this. His body type is extremely different than the guys that you just named. You look at pictures of Nikola Jokic when he was 12 years old, he looks like, there's some sort of metabolism issue there that if he takes his foot off the gas for, say, 2 to 3 weeks, he may gain 10 to 15 pounds.
Okay.
And not playing defense for him. He knows that. He knows his body better than anybody else.
Then don't take your foot off the gas.
But you know who was?
If I know ice cream goes right to my hips, don't eat ice cream.
Right. Well, you know who did have some of the same issues that Nikola Jokic had to start the year? Is one of the greatest players of all time, and I believe if the whole history of the NBA is on the sideline and we're playing pickup, I'm taking him number one overall as the most dominant player I've ever seen, is Shaquille O'Neal. Shaq would often show up to, and that was the initial rift between Kobe Bryant and Shaq was after the first championship when they beat first championship. It was Sixers, I think it was the Pacers, the first title. He came back, he didn't play basketball, he just didn't do anything. He comes back and Kobe never took a day off. Anyway, that's a different conversation.
Yeah, but his game was dominant because he would just overpower you. He would just run you over. So an extra 20 pounds didn't really hurt him.
Right. Well, okay. And Jokic plays
out on the perimeter.
Again, different players. Well, he does play on the perimeter. And in the start of the season, he was like strictly playing out on the perimeter.
And he couldn't make shots because of it.
He was not attacking the basket. He had a stretch in December, and I couldn't believe this. He had a stretch in December where 6 out of 7 games he played, he took 1 free throw or less. Think about what I just said. 6 out of 7 games in the month of December, he shot 1 free throw or less. But when you're out of shape, your level of assertion isn't there.
That's a big man playing lazy basketball.
Yeah, settling out of possessions.
Yeah.
Yep, there's no question.
I find this just inexcusable. This should be something that people are upset about. The fact that this is the guy. We've hitched our wagon to this guy.
Well, the other side of it is, and I understand, again, I co-signed what you said, but that's not what we're experiencing right now. Hopefully this was a lesson learned for him that he can't do this again. He could have cost his team, and he may have cost himself an MVP. That is not that unrealistic to say. But here's what I want to say about these Denver Nuggets right now. Right here, right now, in the month of February, these Denver Nuggets are about as real as you're going to find in the NBA. They are 38-17. They are in the 2 seed where they've been perched for nearly the entire NBA season. They still somehow have not lost a game in division yet this year. They are a perfect 9-0. We're in late February now. Only the Milwaukee Bucks can boast that. This Western Conference is absolutely absurd and deep, and you better show up every night. Against Western Conference teams, they are 25-9. They are 17-10 on the road. These Denver Nuggets are not going away, and I think the Western Conference Finals are as realistic as it has been in the history of the franchise.
I'm right there with you. I'm not down on the Nuggets. Some of the wins they had before the All-Star break, going into Milwaukee when they got there like 4 a.m. and winning that game on a back-to-back, you couldn't help but be impressed. So don't take what I'm saying the wrong way.
I know what you're going to say.
I'm just saying, you get into the postseason, and playoff basketball, playoff series, they tend to be, they're almost like a mental battle. They're like a battle of wills.
For sure.
And I'll take LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, Russell Westbrook, Dame Lillard, if they get in. We saw that last year, right? Like, over a guy who can't bother to show up in shape. That rubs me the wrong way. I've waited 40 years for this team to be in the position, and you'd rather eat whatever in the heck you eat all offseason instead of coming in October ready to go.
I understand what you're saying.
That's frustrating.
But hold on. I understand what you're saying. This is the reason why we had the conversation in the first place. But you need to get in that portal and move on from December or October, November to where we're at right now in February, because he's playing at an MVP level. I know how we got there wasn't perfect, but what's happening right now, you have got to be impressed. And I understand you got James. We're here.
Could be the one seed. Maybe they wouldn't have lost to New Orleans twice in the first month and a half of the season.
Well, that's a bad matchup too, but.
There's like six games that fall into that category.
I got you.
And you know why the Nuggets lose those kind of games? Because they lose focus, they take the eye off the goal here, and they mess around and it eventually catches up to them, right? That sounds like the mentality of a team whose leader messes around all offseason, shows up 25 pounds out of shape, and has to play his way into playing condition.
But James, you're overemphasizing the losses. There's more great wins than there are bad losses at this point. They've beaten every single team that's in the NBA playoffs in the East and West.
Okay, great. They're the two seed. Maybe they'd be the one seed if Nikola Jokic had showed up in shape. Maybe. Who can say they wouldn't be?
I need a break from you. Hit that snapshot.
Columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.